This podcast is sponsored by CJS Productions. Music is our passion, and good music is meant to be shared. Find us online today at cjslivemusic.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name is John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. My next guest, John C. O'Leary III, is a jazz pianist who plays in multiple projects. Two of these projects include La Lucha and the Ben Bryan Band. He has performed in three TEDx conferences and will be releasing his latest album, which was inspired by neuroscience. In this episode, we discuss music therapy, Alzheimer's, getting record players into assisted living facilities, playing music at TEDx conferences, and collaborating and networking with many artists. Without further ado, please enjoy episode 12 with John C. O'Leary III. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought, episode 12 with John C. O'Leary III. John, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I am super excited. First off, I would like to congratulate you on your Kickstarter project.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to see that funding is out there and artists are able to put out an album and actually give back to people. People get cool prizes. What's the name of the new album?
So I haven't decided 100%, but
because I was searching for this on your
right, I haven't put the name yet, but I really want to call it Gila.
I like that.
And Gila is named after Henrietta Lacks. She died in the 1950s, I think 1951, of cervical cancer. And her cells were harvested by a researcher who was lurking for a way to study human cells. The problem is that when you take the cells away from the body, they die because the body provides blood, which has, sustenance, oxygen, and food for the cells to live. And whenever, they tried many different ways of keeping cells alive away from the body, and they would die. And her cells were the first cells not to die.
Wow.
And so they just kept reproducing and reproducing, and they would make another flask of these cells, and then they could give them to other people, and they would reproduce. And it was, they're called an immortal cell line because they just keep on going. And what it has done is it allowed researchers to study drugs and study proteins and mechanisms that would be very hard to do without a cell model. And of course, just like any model, there is a constraints. There are, your benefits and your limitations of what your data can mean and how you can interpret the data. But you can... It's very hard to take, a tissue of a person, put a drug on it and then see what happens to that tissue because the tissue is dying in the process. But when you have cell culture, which is now, cell culture is a very common thing. And just about every biology researcher that, studies proteins and in context of a cell will do cell culture,
If you did that, I think you could make a really cool concept album with that.
Yeah.
I think if you chose that name, I think you could just keep that going.
Yeah.
And because it would be, what's the word I'm looking for? The continued growth.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The continued growth, which which the way I perceive your album, first of all, I am in love with CRISPR. Oh,
thank you so much.
I absolutely love that song. If you guys haven't checked it out, I am going to add CRISPR in the show notes. You can have the YouTube link and check it out. It is a phenomenal song. But if you could, the continued growth, and what I see with what you're doing is that your album and your progress is always going to be a continued growth. As your science develops and as you learn more about what you're studying and are able to integrate it into the music, I see that you'll be cultivating more albums along the lines of the ones that you're in progress of making. They're going to be able to help people out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You know, one of the main attractions is when I first saw, I believe I saw a message that you had tweeted over your Kickstarter. And I don't know how I came across it. Someone must have retweeted, but I checked out your Kickstarter and I was like, holy shit, this guy's making an album based on neuroscience to help Alzheimer's patients out. My mom passed away about 3 years ago from Parkinson's. Mm. And before she left, I'm glad I know what I know now because I'm able to implement it. Alive Inside. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Alive Inside is the story of how a guy goes in an assisted living facilities and really helps people out. He brings in the iPod. He plays tunes for people.
Right.
I really wish I had known about that. Why my mom, even being submerged in the music business, I was so caught up in her sickness that I never thought to turn on the music.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it didn't cross my mind, because my mom used to play music for her plants. Mm-hmm. On the back patio. My dad was a DJ at one point. So I never realized why it didn't cross my mind, because I've always been involved in music. What other, first of all, how did this album concept strictly come from your science background to help Alzheimer's patients?
So let me talk a little bit about my background. So I went to graduate school for neuroscience. I got my PhD in Alzheimer's disease research. And when I finished my degree, I had this dream of becoming a musician. And I've played music all my life, but I've never had enough courage to do it. And I finally just did it. And
that's awesome. To see what congratulations.
Thank you. That it's been great. 4 years this August. And so I just wanted to see if I could, you know, make a living playing music and find a way to combine my passion for music and for science together in some way. So then the concept for this album was that I felt that there is a lot of misconception about science in the world. And scientists do a really good job of doing their job of making discoveries and learning about the world and then talking to each other about that. But they don't do a good job or a good enough job relaying that information to the rest of us in a way that the rest of us can understand. And oftentimes you can tell stories about science in a way that is understandable for people, because science is its own language. You know, you have to understand the language of biology and what they're talking about, you know, and, oh, this protein got, you know, cleaved and phosphorylated, or, you know, and then it's like, well, what does that mean? How does that, why should, you know, so it's hard, like, for a non-science trained person, because, you know, I feel that we're all capable of understanding these concepts if we just had somebody take the time to explain it. And so what I wanted to do with this album was just find a couple of topics that I felt were important to talk about that people should know about. And so that's why I have a song called Gila and one called CRISPR and CRISPR. One called Gene Drive. And, you know, so like the point is that these things, what are these concepts? And, you know, music is my platform. And when I get on stage and give a concert and play these songs, I can talk about them And that becomes the medium of exchange of ideas between two people.
You know what? Okay, so even if you, hypothetically, if you did not talk about your song, you get up and you give a concert or a performance and you're playing these songs. What I like about the titles and the name of these songs is that hopefully it inspires people to actually research the name.
Sure, right.
Like,
right.
I tried researching CRISPR, and like what you just said, I didn't really get all of it.
Yeah.
I kind of get the concept of it. I didn't really fully understand it because I have no training in that. But I did take the time to research it because it's important. I understand the frontal lobe. Uh-huh. And I understand where music memory is actually stored. So with Alzheimer's patients, when you're creating the, can you explain the science and how you choose, the creation process of these songs that translate in helping Alzheimer's patients?
Sure. Well, the goal of the album is to help the community that goes around the album. So anybody who listens to this album who doesn't know what CRISPR is, that's who this album is for.
Okay.
Okay. The more than helping Alzheimer's patients, I wanted to help the family of people who have family that has Alzheimer's disease to help understand maybe a little bit about the disease, or it was just a specific example of how there's a miscommunication in society about science and how having somebody help bridge the gap between these two worlds can be of benefit to the community.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the way that, like, from Alive Inside, the way that music helps Alzheimer's patients is if it's music from their past that they have a connection with. Since this is all new original music, they've never heard this. I don't think that it would cause the same kind of emotional reaction that the music from their own past. And so if you're talking to a patient who grew up listening to big band and they have lots of strong emotional memories associated with that music, and then you put that music in their mind, then that has the possibility of activating some memories.
And recalling the memory.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it's about the association of music with the memories and the way that memories are stored. Emotion is a high component of memory. That's why a lot of people remember where they were when President Kennedy was assassinated, or where you were when 9/11 happened. And these things, we all have these memories that have highly emotional components, and the emotion helps us remember. And so there is a lot of these things they know from people who have had injuries in the brain. And so, for example, there was a guy named H.M. They didn't want to divulge his real name, but those are his initials.
Okay.
And he had I believe that H.M. had seizures. And the way that they try to cure seizures is by removing parts of his brain in an area called the hippocampus. So they took out parts of both sides of the brain. There's a hippocampus in each side, and they took out part of the hippocampus, and all of a sudden he couldn't remember anything anymore. And so every day was the day of his surgery. He woke up and every day he was thinking he was going to go see the doctor and go have his surgery.
Wow.
And he could never remember anything past this day. All his previous memories before then were perfectly accessible. And so what they learned from HM was that the hippocampus is like the place where memories are coming through. And also there's a strong emotional component with the hippocampus and the amygdala. The amygdala is an almond-sized shape organ in the brain, or part of the brain that's closely associated with the hippocampus. And the way that the amygdala is usually used for fear, and it's activated when we're scared or anxious, and it helps the hippocampus by providing the emotional content for memory. And so there was a lady who had, I don't remember her name, but she also had some damage to her brain. She couldn't remember, she couldn't make new memories either. So a doctor wanted to learn if there was a way to test whether there was an emotional component to memory. And what he did is that he pricked her when they went to shake hands, and he was her patient, and they went to shake hands, and I think he pricked her hand or hurt her in some way. And then the next time they met, she didn't want to shake her hand, shake his hand. And although she couldn't remember why, there was an emotional there was an emotional memory there. And so with my music, it's all original, it's all new. And so if you like it, you know, and
I love
you
it.
Know, oh, thank you. Yeah, you're and right. You know, in 70 years, you could go back and listen to it, and you know, maybe there is a connection to your life and that, you know, from the past.
What other mental illnesses besides Alzheimer's is music really helpful for?
Gosh, you know, I don't know the data, if there, you know, if there's like a specific regimen, you know, or like a prescription of music that can cure something. Like for in Alzheimer's, it brings you back for some time.
A brief couple, a minute right. or 2 minutes, and you get to recall great memories with family, mm-hmm. friends, or situations that right. you were in.
But it doesn't cure Alzheimer's.
No, yeah.
Right. And so it's helpful. It helps, you know, dealing with the symptoms. And I think just about everybody listens to music, and it's helpful to them in their lives in some way. And so I think regardless of what condition you may have or what you may be dealing with, you can find music that is helpful to you. And I think the way to figure that out is to monitor your feelings and how you feel. For example, in Parkinson's, the kind of music that they listen to can affect their Parkinsonism. And so very march-like and music that has a very fast and steady beat can help make it worse. And then soothing music can make it better just during that moment, because the way, you know, their brain is interpreting the music, and it comes through and it may help mitigate some of those issues in that moment, you know. And so there's a great book by Dr. Oliver Sacks called Musicophilia, and he talks, it's Tales of Music in the Brain, and he's a neurologist, and he talks about the effects of music and different diseases and different experiences. He talks about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, and how some of his patients would react to music, and how the tempo would, especially the tempo and the march-like or the beat quality, can affect the Parkinson symptoms in patients.
Have you had a chance to play any of your music for Alzheimer's patients live?
My original music, no.
Okay. What would it take to get you?
I would be happy. We'd love that.
That would absolutely. Be great. And, you know, I'm looking at the Kickstarter. I'm going over the Kickstarter, and I noticed that you're going to be selling vinyl.
Yes.
And yes. I definitely signed me up for a vinyl copy. That is Deal. Great. But what do you think if we can get, what would it take for us to, I don't know, maybe this is something we could discuss with a Kickstarter or hit thrift shops up, but what would it take for us to get record players in these assisted living facilities where they have a high percentage of their residents with Alzheimer's or other mental illnesses that we could get the album to? Mm. We gotta figure something out with that, because it's, because we need more music out there to help heal, even if it's only for 2 minutes.
Right.
But if it's for 2 minutes every single day,
right,
that's a huge contribution. That's like the 1%,
absolutely,
the 1% theory, where you do something small, a small little change, 1% every day, that small gain is going to add up to big change over time.
Yeah.
So if we can get record players into assisted living facilities and we can get them music that matters, and all music matters, don't get me wrong. All music matters. Everyone has their own taste and music is just great in general. But specifically for this targeted audience, I would love to see, I would love to see that change. Because I know, you know, with the movie Alive Inside, it's really brought awareness. Yeah. And they're starting to get more people and more volunteers getting the iPads out there and getting people listening to music. But I would like to see vinyl come back, and because it's a different experience listening to vinyl. And I personally think that iPods are so different for the elderly.
Yes.
That I think they could really connect by all sitting around a record
player. I see what you're saying, that you think that maybe the iPod would be too foreign to them. Especially if they already have a disease or something, and then
it's
not part of their long-term memory because it's so new. But you know, most of them probably dealt with record players in some way, so they may be more familiar with that.
Well, and also the experience, because how many?
Yeah, it is.
Like, I remember growing up, I remember my mom and dad sitting around the record player, and it was going to the bar. It was being on Facebook. It was their social interaction.
Yeah.
So if we were able to have a record player in an assisted living facility, and now you have 10, 15 elderly people
sitting around
there, not only will the music hopefully bring back memories, but maybe the experience of them
sharing music
together and sitting around
sitting around
the record player going, wow, I remember back in the 40s, being with my little brother and listening to our first doobop album or whatever it may have been.
That's actually a really good idea.
And I know there's a local record shop in Dunedin, and I know every time I go to thrift stores, I see a lot of record players. So maybe it's something we can kick around by Kickstarter.
Yeah. Sure.
try to get these people listening to more. So, yeah.
So, you know, there is a nonprofit, a 501c3, that they send iPods to different nursing homes and different places for long-term care facilities. And they help teach the people that help them how to, you know, put the music of the people that they like. So they do a lot of work to finding out who this person is, what kind of music are they most likely to like, or talk to their family, who did they listen to when they what did they like, and then putting that person's favorite music in an iPod, and then teaching the nursing staff
how to use it,
and to help them have time to make time for them to have, you know, listen to music. That's more very individual, right?
Yeah.
For one person. And it kind of takes a lot of time, right? Because they have to figure out the individual taste of each person.
Download it offline.
Put it all into one iPod. Have lots of iPods for all these different people. Headphones for all these different people. But if you have one record player,
Some good speakers, decent-sized speakers,
and
in case you're filling the room.
And you know, playing music from the era that was popular for these people. So it's about creating an event for them to hang out, and listen to something that a lot of them like.
I think it's important for them because the hardest part of watching my mom, Parkinson's deteriorate and watching her pass away, the hardest part was that She was a very social person.
Yeah.
And then the disease took a hold of her. And then she was no longer able to be a social person. So if you and I went to all the surrounding assisted living facilities in this area and we walked through the door and just observed, I guarantee you we would observe a non-social atmosphere. And maybe by bringing these record players in is that you're creating an event, a weekly event, you know, every Wednesday and Friday in the main area for 2 hours. They're going to play music and bring the people together and, and share an experience. Because it's the same as going to a concert. It's the same as going to a show. It's an experience.
You're gathering around. And music.
Yeah, you're gathering around people. There's a reason why people go to drum circles. There's a reason why people pay $500 to go see U2 at a show. It's more than the music. It is the experience. It's everything together. You go to a Dave Matthews concert and you see all the people tailgating together and they're all hanging out. And it's just a...
The community.
It's a community. The Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead were pioneers at creating that community.
A tribe.
They encouraged everyone to tape each show. They encouraged everyone to be part of the show. And I think if you could, because we tend to forget about the elderly. And you know, they get sick and we push them off to the side and we put them in the assisting living room and we really forget. But they don't need to be forgotten. And absolutely. And I think that music can bridge that gap. I think we can help them out. I think we can bring back the memories. Even like we said, if it's just briefly for a minute, 2 minutes, to bring a joy to a loved one for a minute or two, that's worth an eternity. So
yeah, that's so cool, man.
Yeah, we'll kick it around some more. Yeah, we'll talk around. I mean, there's got to be something we could do. I have four listeners. Someone's going to help us out. So. I really love what La Lucha is doing.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a huge fan of collaboration.
Awesome.
I'm a huge fan of networking. I believe that it does so much. So
absolutely.
Not only are you creating together, but you're building a bond.
Right.
You're creating something with that person that's special. And I love the fact I've watched all the La Lucha videos and I've watched the TED, especially.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Especially the TED segments because I'm a huge TED fan. Can you take me on that TED journey? What was that like going to the performing at a TEDx twice, correct?
We just did our third one actually
awesome.
In March in Douglasville. Wow. Doing it. First of all, for those of you who don't know, I'm in a band called La Lucha. I'm the pianist. We're three best friends from three different parts of the world, and we love making music together. We have a little bit of Britney Spears, a little pop, a little Latin-infused rhythms, and we're jazz musicians at heart, and we love to combine our influences to make music that is uniquely our own. And so we've done three TEDx talks together as a group. And man, it is an amazing experience. It is an incredible opportunity to share a message. And it's an amazing platform. It's just so cool. First of all, we were talking about Toastmasters earlier.
Yeah.
And about getting in front of people and talking. And you know, learning how to craft a message and figuring out what to say and how you're going to say it. And, you know, the interesting thing is that there are several components of it. There is having something to talk about. That's the hardest part, right?
You
could be a great speaker, but you don't have anything interesting to say.
Yeah.
So you have to have a product, a thing, a story, an event, something you've done, something to share, something that somebody else shared with you, you want to share. But you have to have something to share with people. And then you have to find you have to share it in a way that speaks to others, so that you can have that exchange of ideas between you and somebody else. And so that I think that all media is, that's what it's all about. You know, whether it's a podcast or you're at the bar with your friends or, you know, speaking with your spouse or your children, it's all about an idea, a way of saying it that helps the other person understand where you're, what you're trying to say or
what you're trying to convey, the message you're trying to convey.
Yeah. And it's a very powerful thing to be able to stand in front of a group of people.
It's awesome.
and share your life experiences with them.
So when you're doing these performances, they're half speaking, half playing.
Right.
Because you guys, the TEDx one in Tampa with Gloria Muñoz?
Yes. Yeah, so,
I hope I pronounced that right.
Very close. So we have, one was TEDx Tampa Bay, and that was directly from La Lucha. And Gloria did one song with us. And then Gloria, she got invited to do a TEDx, TEDx USF.
Okay.
University of South Florida. And that was based on a project that we had all done together. Mark Feynman is the drummer in our band, and he got a grant from the studio at 620. And the studio 620 had gotten another grant from the Doris Duke Foundation. And so through them, we got this grant, and Mark wanted to take an idea of mine and use La Lucha as the vessel to make this idea happen through this grant. And we did a Kickstarter around it as well, back 2014, 2013.
How was that Kickstarter? Was it successful?
Yes, it was. It was very successful. And this idea was all about collaboration. And it was about the idea was this. Usually when new music is presented, it is like, here's my CD.
That's it.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Or here's my new photography. Here's my new book of poetry. Just like scientists don't take the time to develop stories around their science, artists also often don't take the time
to develop a story
about their work. And, you know, nobody cares what you're doing.
Not unless it has a story behind it.
They care why you're doing it.
Why? Yeah, and that's where the story comes into play.
And there's a great book called Start With Why, and a guy named Simon Sinek crafted this saying that says people don't buy what you sell or what you do, they buy why you do it. And it's about communicating what you're doing.
And why you're doing it.
And so then so that was one thing. Another thing was that most music doesn't collaborate with other types of disciplines. So wouldn't it be cool to have a collaboration aspect? So you have this storytelling aspect, the collaboration aspect, and then I'm a scientist, and I wanted to raise awareness for Alzheimer's disease. You know, the bucket challenge for was very popular, and I think it was for muscular dystrophy.
Yeah.
Alzheimer's disease doesn't have a bucket challenge. They don't have any type of...
Let's create one.
Right?
Let's
There's no kind of like gimmicky thing that people do to raise awareness. There's no Alzheimer's disease survivor that's going to come and say and talk. Let's, you know, wow. Because there are no Alzheimer's disease survivors. There's not a single drug out there that can remediate it, that can slow it down, that can do anything. Everything that's out there to treat Alzheimer's disease is just palliative. It's just to reduce your symptoms for a while, you know. And I felt that there is a huge need for funding there's a huge need for funding for Alzheimer's disease. And a lot of the other diseases, all diseases matter. We need money for everything, right? Even if there's a disease that only one person has, it matters to them and to their family, right? And so all diseases matter. And I feel for whatever reason, there are a lot more stories being told about heart disease and cancer, and not enough stories told about Alzheimer's disease. And so I said, hey, we can take this opportunity to tell a story about Alzheimer's disease in a multimedia collaborative way. So we collaborated with a photographer, graphic designer, Rossi Newsom, and we collaborated with Gloria Munoz, who is a poet, and La Lucha. And so the three of us created 8 different art installations. And each art installation was a multimedia art installation in a gallery.
Is this all under Art for a Cause?
Art for a Cause was the...
Or is this separate?
Art for a Cause, it's just the... I think it was the name.
Okay.
The name of this was See, Hear, Feel.
Okay.
Of this project was See, Hear, Feel. And the purpose of it was to create awareness in our community about Alzheimer's disease. And we've gone through different places to display the artwork, the music, the poetry.
And when you go to different places, are you putting on a performance at those places?
No. Most of the time, no. It's like an exhibit.
Gotcha.
Like a gallery exhibit.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there room to put on a performance at these places?
Sometimes.
Because I love the exhibits. Cool. And I'm wondering if a performance would enhance the exhibit.
Sure. When we premiered it, we did a performance. It depends. I think the purpose of this was to be an exhibit and not a performance, because that's usually how it's done. So we want to do it completely different. We wanted to show you new music in a completely different way. And so I think that was the cool part of it. And we were all involved in Alzheimer's disease in some way, and we're trying to tell a story about it.
Could you create an exhibit outside the normal housing for an exhibit? Mm-hmm. So, for example,
I mean, we'd go to assisted living facilities, and with tables and iPods, we bought things that would hold we would mount the art in a specific, backing, and then we would.
Did you find that beneficial when you took that to the?
Well, more than whether it was beneficial or not, it was part of our mission to spread the awareness for the need for funding for Alzheimer's disease.
I find it very important for artists to get outside of their comfort zone.
For us, that was completely outside. We work, as musicians, we work in venues.
Yeah.
And so for us to, instead of giving a concert, doing an art show, that was way out of our comfort zone and a whole new way of presenting new music.
An example, the TIA, Tampa mm-hmm. International Airport.
Right.
Does a Friday flight series.
Right.
What a perfect place to put your exhibit. How many people are coming through there?
Yeah.
And not only that, is the diversity of the flyers that would be coming through the airport and seeing that exhibit.
That is a great idea.
Because you're talking, I have no idea what the numbers at TIA are, but I could only imagine on a prime day of flying, how many people are coming and going through that airport,
absolutely.
And how many people could see that exhibit and how that could affect people.
Right.
And it's that trickle down effect. You get people to see it and move on. So why is it important to collaborate? And the reason I ask you this question is, I'm an agent, mm-hmm. and I really promote artists collaborating.
Yeah, absolutely.
The more artists you can collaborate, I honestly feel the better opportunity it's going to enhance your career.
Absolutely.
You're going to become a better musician. You're going to get better, pick up better networks. You're going to reach different fan bases. So every aspect of it, you're improving. you're improving musically, business-wise, promotion-wise. You're getting out there. Can you talk about the when you sit down and you're doing a jazz show and you're playing with jazz artists that you've never played with before? Can you talk about the science behind it, why it's so good to improvise and collaborate?
I don't know the specific science behind collaboration, but just from a business perspective, I think the essence of success is to provide value for other people, at least within a business standpoint. And so when you're collaborating with somebody, you're not thinking, you don't come to it with the mentality, what can they do for me? You're thinking, what can I do for them? How can I create value for other people? And so when you're creating value for others, and especially others who are farther along their career than you are, and they're exposing you to their networks and to their, let's say you're a musician and you see people who are creating videos, but on Instagram, for example, but they need somebody to provide music for them, you know, DM them and say, hey, I'd be super happy to give you my music for free. Put it in all your videos that you want. And, you know, if they have an audience of whatever, and one person says, oh, I heard you on such and such's video, and I thought your music was great. How can I purchase it? You know, you've made a fan. And so by collaborating is the way to spread, to create distribution. The problem with today's music is that there's no distribution, right?
No.
And so you have to create your own distribution.
Your own distribution.
And how do you create the distribution? Through collaboration.
Yes.
I mean, it's about your network and the people. So, you know, you have your own fans and the people that you're develop relationships with. And each person has their own group of people that they're. So essentially, you're collaborating with every person that loves your music. And so they love your music. They're a potential person that can hire you for a gig. And let's be honest with, you know, this is how we make money today in music, through live performance. You know, that won't go away. Computers can never replace a human being making art.
No.
And nobody wants to see a computer making art. It's not valuable. We want to see a person sitting down at an instrument or standing up and making music. And so that's what's so cool about art. So that if you make art and you're good enough, you always have a way to make money. The hard part is finding the distribution for your work. And the best way is to deliver that value to other people. And how do you deliver that value? Is through collaboration.
And I am going to add that quote in our show notes. And I really want people to think about that. The way to create distribution is by collaborating. And you nailed it on that, because we do live in a digital world.
Yeah. A penny for every three plays?
Yes. Yeah,
like the 50 people that listen to my music, I'm going to get, you know, what's 50 divided by 3? That's how many pennies I'm going to get. You know what I mean?
You're not making any money. Your money is coming off your merchandise at your shows and either actual
ticket sales and
ticket sales and gigs. Gigs and the corporate functions and stuff like that. So please, artists, think about that. I want it to hit home. I want you to get out and collaborate. Yeah. And what I was explaining to John earlier is that when you do get out and you collaborate and you create something with an artist that you've never worked with, you're creating not just networking, you are creating a special bond with that person.
Yeah.
Because you guys made something together.
Yes.
You went out and you created something out of nothing, and you made something together.
Absolutely.
And whether it's photography or art or playing music, and I really want that to hit home, because in Tampa we have amazing, amazing artists in this area.
There's so few organizations dedicated to connecting these people. Like, they're there, but you don't know about them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yes, and we need to bring awareness. If this city wants to grow, if this city wants to put itself on the map,
on the cultural map. St. Pete is goddamn beat.
Oh God,
hardcore.
Yeah, St. Pete's great, but there's also you got Dunedin, you got Clearwater, you got Tampa. We got to step our game up.
Yeah.
We got to collaborate more. Yeah. We got to work with each other. Quit fighting your neighbor. There's no need for it. You know, step up and create something with that person.
Absolutely.
And there's lots and lots of talent in this area.
Oh,
and
my gosh, incredible.
It just drives me crazy when I see guys not working together.
Yeah.
Well, you know, invite that guy out to the show. I've told this story a couple times over the podcast. There was an artist who came into town from Ohio, went to a local bar. I showed up at the local bar. I never heard of this guy before, and it was packed. Oh, why is this place so packed? It's Thursday night. The guy had hired a local artist to sit in with him for the show. Because he had never played this town before. Great idea. Collaborated and created with someone he never played with.
He enhanced his distribution.
Yes.
And the collaboration of somebody.
And I find it's extremely important. I hope we can get more people to start thinking outside the box.
I mean, that's what we're doing here. You know, when this is available, I will put this in my networks. And then people who don't know you, who know me, will find out about you and vice versa.
And hopefully I can get some new people to interview or whatever.
Exactly.
You never know what it's going to lead to. And that's why I wanted, before the show, that's why I wanted to share my information with you. I wanted to, I sent your video out by email, and one of our artists fell in love with CRISPR.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
It was great. It was great because this guy is just a Jedi. He's really good. And he's one of my favorite people to work with because he thinks outside the box.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to encourage to all of my guests. Four
Absolutely.
Of them. I love saying that just because I think it's funny. It's so hard.
We all start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, and you can't make it. It has to organically grow. It has to be an organic outreach. You can't make stuff for people. Make stuff for yourself. Make stuff that's going to help you grow and help
I think absolutely. I think both can work. If the good thing about making something for yourself is that you know if it works, at least for one person, right?
Yeah.
And then the hope is that there are other people like you, which there are. In the age of the internet, we have access to just about everybody on the planet. You know, a large portion of people are on the internet. And so those who like what you do will... they can find you.
Yeah.
And so our job is to leave crumbs, you know, on these different social media places for those who are interested in what we do to find us. And
I like that analogy.
Yeah. And you're just leaving little trails here. And then eventually you find somebody who's, I saw a post and you like music and neuroscience and business. And, you know, I love that combination of these three things. And, you know, great. Boom. I like you. And so that's what's so interesting about the world. And but some people are really gifted at or develop the gift of being empathetic to what other people need. And they create stuff for the needs of others. And if you're that can work as well. But I know what I need more than what I know about what other people need. So start creating. There's no excuse for not making.
No.
If not for somebody else and for yourself. Put it out there.
I
think what you're doing is fantastic. I don't have a podcast. I should be podcasting.
It's so much fun.
You know,
it's such a great learning experience.
You know, and I think it's going to blow up. Like, seriously.
It is.
I just saw an article today that there was, last year, 20% of Americans were podcasting.
Invisibilia.
Yeah, right.
And what was the other one, your favorite?
Radiolab.
Radiolab, which I keep on getting recommended all
amazing.
The time.
But it's so cool because last year there was 20% Americans were podcasting. This year, 30%. So if you have 300 million people, 10% is what, 30 million, 20% is 60 million. So you went from 60 million to 90 million in 1 year.
In 1 year.
And it's a, you know, $200 million market. It's very niche compared to, you know, general markets. But they, according to this article, it's going to, it's pronosticated to be a $500 million business in 3 years.
Wow.
So that's more than double what it is today. And so, you know, especially we have more and more things that take away our attention. We have less attention for things and people. And, but audio, you can hear and drive at the same time.
Oh.
You can hear and work on, you know, your home chores at the same time. You know, a lot of us do manual labor that, you know, you can be listening to something and working on something else. You know, like, you know, you have kids, like, it's so hard to find time to, like, read a book and sit down and read it. So you get an audiobook and you can listen to it while you're cleaning, cooking, taking care of stuff. And so, you know, there's Alexa Voice is happening now, Google Home. Apple just announced their new HomePod situation.
Similar to Alexa.
Right. Yeah. And so now it's like that thing will be talking to you.
It's,
like,
it's
you'll be saying, hey, show, you know.
It's coming.
Yeah.
The audio is going to be there. All right. I have two questions for you. And this is spawned from other podcasts. What music, what album would you give to another?
I guess it depends on the person and what they like.
Okay.
I, you know, for my jazz musician friends and my musician friends, I really like a young pianist named Tigran Hamasyan. He's my absolute favorite pianist right now. And I just love his music, his creativity, his hard work, his dedication. He's such a huge inspiration for me. And I want to tell everybody that I know about him and his music.
Sweet. I love checking out new music. Yeah. And what book would you give to someone?
What book? Gosh, it really depends on
I know this is an open-ended question because it does depend on the...
But let me tell you the books that have influenced me a lot. Seth Godin. I'm a huge Seth Godin fan.
I get his daily email
blast.
Yes,
me too.
Everyone listening, sign up for his email blast every day.
Incredible.
Seth Godin. The guy is a genius. He writes and writes and writes. And Purple Cow.
I love Purple Cow.
Purple Cow is
for
great.
Me, The Dip really...
I haven't read that one yet.
The Dip is about knowing when to stick and knowing when to quit. And it really helped shape my decision-making about what I wanted to do with my life. And I didn't know whether I should stick or quit music or what to do. And I decided that was the dip that I wanted to conquer, you know, and it's a long, hard dip and you just have to go for it, you know, as much as you can.
His work is so encouraging.
So incredible. Yeah.
The best part, the most beneficial part is besides that he's encouraging, he gets you to think.
Absolutely.
And I think
he doesn't give you a map.
No.
He gives you the raw materials for you to build your own map.
Yes.
Purple Cow is about making a really great product. And then all marketers are storytellers. Huge book. I mean, every single person that we're all selling ourselves all the time.
And
we're
some,
all creating marketing some in some way.
You are selling yourself.
You know what makes... You know, sales and marketing are two separate things that people get confused all the time. But the thing that would make sales so much easier is if your marketing is on point. When you have great marketing, people come to you. They're begging you, please let me have this. I want your money. Like, you know, you go to the Apple store and they're turning people away because they can't. They have too much volume of people.
Oh, they're packed no matter what time of day.
I mean, 10 a.m. on a Thursday morning, you go to the Apple store.
And the slam. Like,
and
they're just
slammed.
You're waiting for 2 hours. Go walk around the mall.
You're waiting all day.
Yeah.
If you need them to help you with something, I mean, it's better to just call and do it at home because at least you're at home.
One of my guests said, as far as playing locally, he said, don't make yourself readily available all the time.
See, I would disagree with that. I would hardcore disagree really? With that. Absolutely.
Because his mission, I want to hear your thoughts on this, but his thoughts were to get out of town, hit the road, go play venues, come back into town. So when you come back in town, people are actually coming out to see you. See, he plays in a different spectrum than you.
I don't know the context of which
he plays originals and covers.
Sure. I don't know the context of where he said, or, you know, this person said that. But, I think what we do is we're a customer relationship. We're a customer relationship business. You know, the person who's going to buy your record, it's because they like you. I mean,
was gig wise, not record wise.
Right. So for me, it's about being available to my audience, being available. If somebody sends me a message, like you sent me a message on Instagram, on Twitter. And I was like, I don't know this person. I don't know CJS Productions, but hey, sure. Let's connect. So I could have been, I'm not available. And then we wouldn't be having this opportunity to collaborate and be available for each other. And so, sure, a market may get tired of seeing you all the time and you're doing the same thing and saying, you know. But if the problem is that you're being boring, then you need to be not boring, you know. If you're providing a new and interesting show every night, people, if it's good, people will come and see you.
See you.
And sure, there's definitely... when people haven't heard you in a while and they want to hear you, sure. I totally get the, you're not begging for their attention, making yourself wanted by the fact that, you know, you're not begging for the attention. I get that. But I think if someone does reach out to you, you should be available for them. If you want to turn them into a fan and sell to them later. Because it's about creating an interaction, providing value, and, you know, in 5 years, hey, I'm making a new record. I've been giving you free music, free videos. I hang out with you. I come, you know, to your pod. I do all these things for free, and then now I'm making a record. You're kind of guilting them into buying your stuff because you've developed a relationship, and so. For me, it's about...
I wouldn't say guilting. Because if you've given them free content over the years, right. I wouldn't say guilting. They're going to be happy to be part of that purchase.
But in a way, they're going to be like, I can't not give to this person because they've done so much. And so for me, it's about providing value and about connecting with my audience. And, you know, I mean, Taylor Swift is a person who's really good about this.
Connect him.
And like, she'll like stop at a random fan's house and videotape it. And then it makes she has a fan for life.
Yeah. Amanda Palmer was really good with that. Her TED Talk?
I did not see her TED Talk, but I saw her Kickstarter,
$1 million. Her TED Talk is really cool. She was in her book great too.
I haven't read her book.
Her book's really good. Cool. She was in Boston and she started off as a street musician.
Wow.
Not a musician. She was standing on a milk crate dressed up as the Statue of Liberty. And that's how she started. That was part of what kickstarted her career.
Yeah.
She was able to connect. And by doing that, she connected with her audience. So someone put a dollar in the bucket, she'd move like a robot down and hand him a flower. And it was the eye contact. And it was the nonverbal connection that enabled her to take those lessons off the street and implement it into her music career. And by doing that, what she would do is that when a fan reached out and engaged with her on any social media format, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Flickr, blah, 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 whatever it was, when that fan reached out and said, hey, man, how are you? I'm good.
Absolutely.
How's your day going? So her engagement.
It's all about engagement.
Her response.
It's all about engagement and attention and that, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're trying to siphon attention to what you're doing from your audience, you know, and if you're good and if you're creating value for them, they will give you that attention. And so, but if you disappear and then all of a sudden, hey, come give me money, they'll be like, no, I haven't talked to you in 3 years. Why should I care about what you're doing? So that's why I think you should be available and create a relationship with as many people as possible.
I
continue talking to them, develop that relationship, get them, you know, your through that relationship, then it's like your parents, you know, like my mom does so much for me and we develop this relationship and then I can come to her anytime and ask for something. Not just because she's my mom, but because of all the bond that we have.
The bond you created.
You know? And so it's all about the relationship.
That's a beautiful thing.
You know,
thing.
People say, well, what, you know, I follow a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk. He has a great book.
I just watched
He has a book called The Thank You Economy, which talks about this. And basically, we're in a relationship business, music, creating relationships to each other. And he says, what is the ROI of your mother? And what he means by that is people talk about the ROI of social media. They don't want to do it because they don't – what's the return on their investment of their time? And it's like, well, what's the return of the investment of the relationship with your mom? Like, it's a lifetime of a person being there for you.
I just watched a Impact Theory with Gary on it.
Oh, cool. Yes, and I've seen that.
Amazing episode.
Incredible, so, right?
Oh, amazing. Awesome. Well, cool, John. I – greatly appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to collaborating with you on most some definitely. Projects. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to episode 12 with John C. O'Leary III. If you enjoyed this episode or our podcast, do us a favor. Head over to the iTunes store or Podomatic and subscribe to the podcast. You can also reach us on Twitter. And the handle is @HoldThat77. If you have any comments or feedback, hit us up at cjsevents1@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John Samuel, and I'm out.